You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
As January closes, February beckons, spring training is almost here. Time to check out the top prospects in our National League Central edition. As we start thinking about spring training, there are, you know, so many big news stories for this team, and yet there are some questions like Kyle Schwarber and how exactly he fits in. Obviously, he fits in. The question is, how will they use him?
Right, and it was a funny discussion during the Cubs convention and a coaches panel in that Mike Borzello, who's the catcher coach, of course, said that as far as he's concerned, Schwarber's a catcher. And Dave Martinez, the outfield coach, said as far as he's concerned, Schwarber's an outfielder. And, of course, then Joe Maddon was kind of funny about it and asked Eric Hinsky, the hitting coach, who apparently people confuse for Schwarber. They look very much alike, sort of big monsters, you know, strong guys, asked Eric Hinsky what he thought, and Hinsky's only comment was that Schwarber will be hitting left-handed and hitting home runs, which is really all the Cubs want him to do. Excuse me. But what they're going to do, the game plan now is to have Schwarber show up in spring training, and he'll spend his mornings with the catchers, and they do a lot of early work. They're usually the first ones in camp. He'll be out there catching side sessions, doing his drills, and then in the afternoon, he'll be an outfielder doing his drills there and working with Dave Martinez. So one thing for sure, he'll get a great workout in Arizona because he's going to be working pretty hard all day. But they want, in talking to Mike Borzello, the catching instructor, you know, because Schwarber didn't get to catch every day last year, they want to try and give him as much instruction as possible because they still look at him as a catcher of the future.
Interesting. You know, hearing you describe this, I guess the first thing that jumps to mind are like switch hitters. And what a challenge it is to be a great switch hitter because you have to do twice the work, or you minimize just a little bit the amount of work you do on each side, and that makes it that much more difficult. And so the question is, with Schwarber, does he do the full catcher's day and a full outfielder's day? That's so much work. Or do they have to trim each just a touch?
Well, I think what they'll do is, knowing Schwarber, he'll do the full catcher stuff. He'll want to be lockered near the catchers. He'll want to be out there first thing in the morning. I know in talking to the other minor league coaches, they joked with me that Schwarber would often beat them to the facility to be looking at videos of pitchers, you know, before the coaches got there. I mean, he was that eager to get into the whole studying the pitchers and learning what they do and getting a better feel for them. I can see where what they might do is maybe, you know, let him focus on, of course, Barzell is going to be pushing for the catching stuff, and Schwarber loves that. But the cool thing was that Schwarber hasn't wasted any time learning more about the outfield position, because he started talking to Jason Hayward during the Cubs convention and just sort of pestering him a little bit about, you know, what do I do here, what do I do there? And it's just, the kid is just a sponge. He just cannot get enough information. And it's really fun to see. One thing that Borzello told me an interesting story, this will kind of wrap it up so you know what kind of kid this is. Apparently during the postseason last year, Maddon at some point turned to Schwarber and said, can you play third base? Because Joe must have been thinking ahead to a possible double switch, you know, where he would have put Bryant in the outfield or something, and he was just looking to get Schwarber at third. And Schwarber, of course, said yes. And he said, I just need a glove, ran inside of the clubhouse, borrowed somebody's glove, came back out in the dugout. And then as Borzello tells it, he stood next to Borzello and he said, you know, I've never played third. But that, you know, that wasn't going to deter him. I mean, he would have gone out there no matter what. You know, if Joe had said, we want you to pitch, he would have done that. You know, if he wants you to play shortstop, he would have done that. So I think, Schwarber, I know, has spent this offseason in Tampa, Florida, doing his training, and I'm guessing that he'll probably be one of the Cubs that'll be in the best shape of just about anybody that shows up in camp.
Well, we've all seen him swing the bat, so we know he can play third base or first base or outfield or catcher or shortstop. Doesn't matter. Just get him in there.
Get him in there.
You know, last year was certainly a year of, you know, sort of the realization of so much great promise in young players like Schwarber. I don't know that that is going to be the scene this year in Chicago, right? I mean, this year it's about, okay, how does this team come together and how do these guys work together and how far can they get? But that said, there is still always that excitement around spring training of seeing some of the top prospects. Who are a couple of the top name prospects you think fans should be ready to be excited about?
Well, if I were a Cub fan, I would try and watch a shortstop named Gleyber Torres whenever he's out there on the field. This is a kid that they signed out of Venezuela. He was the number one prospect in Venezuela when the Cubs got him. And they signed him in 2013. He just turned 19 years old in December. So he's still, in baseball terms, he's still a baby. But this kid is so gifted at short and so smooth and just amazing to watch out there. Now, maybe they move him at some point from short to second because you've got, you know, a 22-year-old in Addison Russell over there at short, so he's kind of a long-term prospect. But Torres is just really special. He batted 293 at South Bend, Class A South Bend last year, 22 stolen bases. They did move him up to High A Myrtle Beach, but that was just at the end. He only played in 7 games. I'm guessing he would start the season at Myrtle Beach in 2016. But he's just really fun to watch if you appreciate defense. And he's also pretty good with a bat. And it's a real good contact hitter. So he's one guy I would keep an eye on.
Well, I popped up the website the other day. Colton Wong, he wants to bat leadoff. What's the story there? Is there some meat to this one? Do you think he'll end up in that top spot?
You know what? I think the Cardinals will give him a look in spring. I mean, you know, you have a lot of different factors here. I mean, the Cardinals have a leadoff hitter in Matt Carpenter, certainly been one of the best hitting from that spot over the last 3 years. You look at Matt Carpenter's on-base percentage, which is, you know, hitting up bases really his bread and butter, that and working deep counts and doing well in deep counts. And so you kind of ask yourself, is it really worth the Cardinals trying to make a change when they have a guy at the top of the order who gets on so frequently? You know, the flip side of that, of course, is that Carpenter is coming off a season in which he led the team in home runs with 28. He led the team in RBIs. But you do wonder what he could offer if maybe put in more of a run production spot in the lineup. The problem to this point that the Cardinals have had is they haven't had a great leadoff option to replace Carpenter, which is why they've kept him in that top spot. So, you know, Colton Wong, very vocal recently at the Cardinals winter warm-up that he wants a chance to hit leadoff. I do think the Cardinals will give him some opportunities in spring to see what he can do there. But really, it's going to come down for Colton to his ability to get on base. I mean, you look at Matt Carpenter, his on-base percentage is, I believe, at 383 the last 3 years. Colton Wong hovers right around 300, and that's just not good enough for him to be a leadoff hitter. So, if he's able to get on base with more frequency, he would bring a little bit of pop to that spot. And again, you do think about kind of what Matt Carpenter could offer at different places in the lineup. Maybe it's a possibility, but you know, at some point, Colton Wong, it's going to have to be more than just words and kind of you know, his lobbying. He's going to have to prove, again, that he can get on base with more regularity.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 300 on base is still below league average. I mean, it really doesn't cut muster. And meanwhile, it's one thing if he was even over, let's say, 320, 340. So when you're talking over 380 as an on-base percentage, it's tough for anybody to want to take somebody like that out of the leadoff spot.
Yeah, and that's really the dilemma that the Cardinals are in. Again, they do kind of dream of what Matt Carpenter could be, maybe as a number two hitter, even a number three hitter of this team. You know, I think they're going to explore maybe moving Matt Holliday in the lineup, something they haven't done over the last 4 years. But yeah, I mean, Colton Wong, you know, he did hit leadoff very well in the minors. But again, that being said, we just haven't seen the consistency from him month to month for him to necessarily profile yet as a top of the order guy. Now, he would bring some speed to that part of the lineup. You know, Matt Carpenter, a very good base runner, very instinctual baseball player, but not necessarily your quickest. You're not your prototypical leadoff hitter in that regard. Colton Wong can steal 20-plus bases. But again, you can't steal bases unless you get on base. And to this point, Colton hasn't been able to do that with enough consistency for the Cardinals to feel like that's the move they want to make.
Yeah, well, agreed. Let me ask you this. You know, Jed Jerko, we talked about the signing a little bit in the past, a versatile player. How do you see him fitting in and working out with this club?
Yeah, and, you know, and we haven't, he hasn't gotten a lot of attention here. You know, so much of the offseason chatter here in St. Louis has been, you know, kind of what the Cardinals weren't able to do, and, you know, their inability to sign Hayward or Price. And, you know, the Michael Leake signing certainly gained a lot of traction. I think that Jed Jerko trade that was made during the winter meetings with a swap for John Jay with the Padres, that could be a big piece for this team. I mean, you look at kind of what went wrong at the end of the season for the Cardinals last year, and I think the very top of that list was just the fact that so much of this club was fatigued, and, you know, specifically how that affected the middle infielders, both Colton Wong and Johnny Peralta. Now, the Cardinals just didn't have good backup options at either of those positions for much of the year. They didn't believe that Pete Cosma could offer them anything offensively. You know, Greg Garcia was serviceable, but not necessarily great, and as a result, the Cardinals just kept sending both Peralta and Wong out there day after day after day. Quite frankly, by the end of the season, both were utterly exhausted. So that's something that the Cardinals, especially as you look at Johnny Peralta, about to be 34 this year, they want to prevent. Bringing in Jed Jerko is going to give them another option, an option with a little bit of power as well, to sub in if Colton needs a day off, if Peralta needs some time away. And, you know, also at the corner infield spots, he's an option there. So he's really protection. I think he's going to accrue a good number of at-bats, not necessarily at one single position, but he is going to be a pretty important piece, again, as the Cardinals want to rest up some of their veterans so that they're stronger late in the season.
All right, well, when we, you know, about this time of year, in fact, I was going to point out, next time you and I get together, it'll be the month of February, which means spring training, and, I mean, it is right here upon us. So one of the exciting things about spring training is seeing some of those players coming up, right? And you may not see them contribute during the regular season, but you start getting excited about how they may fit in years to come. Who are a couple of prospects you think Cardinals fans will be keen to get a look at this spring?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start off with the obvious one, and that's Alex Reyes. You know, he's been atop their prospect list now for the last year. Right-handed pitcher, signed out of the Dominican Republic a few years ago, a power arm, you know, often compared to Carlos Martinez. You know, I've actually heard some evaluators within the organization say potentially has even better, higher ceiling than Carlos Martinez. So, you know, that tells you what they think of the Alex Reyes. You know, the catch with him, of course, is that he was suspended in November for testing positive for what he says was a marijuana usage. So he will miss the first 6 weeks of the season this year. Had a terrific year last year, climbed up to AA by the end of the year. And, you know, really disappointing kind of what's happened since. The Cardinals thought that this was a guy that at some point this year would contribute on the major league team. Now, whether that would have been in a bullpen role or as a starter, you know, we didn't really know. But the fact that he's not going to be able to pitch until mid-May will certainly set him back. That's not to say he can't contribute at some point down the season, but again, a little bit of a lag start for him, and also cost him the opportunity to come to major league camp, so he'll be a part of the minor league program. But he remains the biggest arm in the system, and, you know, right behind him is a guy named Jack Flaherty, who ranks number two on the Cardinals prospect list. First-round supplemental pick 2 years ago out of high school, so he's a little further behind than Alex Reyes. Just in that he's still developing, but had a very good year at Peoria last year. The Cardinals believe that he could be kind of a special pitcher. You know, we always talk about pitchers in this organization and the number of homegrown pitchers that they've had, and they do seem to have another nice crop on its way.
Well, yeah, and that's no shocker. What about some bats? Are there some young hitters maybe not too far off?
Yeah, you know, they probably are a little further off than the Cardinal fans would like. You know, your hitters, Piscotty and Grichuk, who we saw come up last year and make a statement, you know, they're really your best young hitters and kind of ready at this point. They do have a young outfielder, Magnurius Sierra, but we're talking about a kid who was in low-level A-ball last year. So, again, a couple years away. Again, very special talent, somebody the Cardinals do believe can contribute. But no, when you kind of look at the Cardinals' top prospects right now that are close to major league ready, I think you're going to see more on the pitching side than the position player side. The position player side seems to be a little bit loaded down at the lower minor league levels at this point.
Take me back to like the mid-aughts, right? The Doug Davis, Chris Capuano, Ben Sheets days. I understand Capuano's coming back on a minor league deal. What are the expectations for him?
Well, you know, he's a different pitcher than he was. When the Brewers had him, they got him in a big blockbuster trade with the Diamondbacks that sent Richie Sexton to Arizona. Craig Counsell was in that trade for Milwaukee. Junior Spivey was a guy who played a lot of games for Milwaukee as a result of that trade. Lyle Overbay was a good first baseman for the Brewers. It was, one of those deals that actually worked out pretty well for Milwaukee, and Capuano was part of it. He won 18 games in 2005, even though he admittedly didn't pitch great. He was that guy in the rotation who every time he took the mound, the team would score 6 or 7 runs for him. And you mentioned Doug Davis used to give him an absolute hard time about that every time because Doug Davis couldn't buy a run. Then 06, Chris Capuano went to the All-Star game as a Brewer. He had another Tommy John. It derailed his major league career briefly. He spent 2 years out of the big league. But since, he's kind of come back as a swing man. He came back with the Brewers. Then he went to the Mets, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Yankees. He's started. He's relieved. He's been a specialist. He's been a middleman. And where he exactly fits with this Brewers team, I think, is totally up for grabs. They have opportunity for left-handers, certainly in the bullpen. They've got Will Smith as a good late-inning guy. Also bringing back, along with Chris Capuano, they're bringing back Cesar Jimenez, who is a little known but effective for the Brewers down the stretch last season. So he's going to get a look as a specialist. And then Chris Capuano is just going to have to bid to win a spot somewhere in there. 37 years old now, interesting to kind of come full circle. It's crazy to think that it's been, going on a dozen years since he pitched his first inning for the Brewers, and now he's back. And the franchise, frankly, is in a similar position from the first time this year.
That'll be an interesting addition. Should be fun to watch. Hopefully he can rekindle some of those more memorable days. Meanwhile, let's go back to the future, if you will. You talked about the marketing message. They're selling youth. They're selling a few years out. The top 100 prospects coming out, MLBpipeline.com, later this week. Who are the top couple of prospects? Do you see any shifting at the top of the list? And what should fans be excited about?
Yeah, I think the Brewers, at least their top two, is pretty set. Dave, their number one is clearly the shortstop, Orlando Arcia. A breakthrough year with Double-A Huntsville last season, the top minor league player, according to one of our measures. A terrific defensive player, and he has long been that. Long been the youngest guy in his league, and now the bat has started to come around in the last couple of seasons, including last year. Not a lot of power. He's not going to be a home run hitter, but he's going to be a gap-to-gap guy, great speed, stolen base threat, really a tremendous all-around player. And, the most common compliment you hear from scouts, and the Brewers' former farm director, Reed Nichols, used to say this, that he's one of those guys who makes players around him better. And those are rare players in baseball. It's such an individual sport, and it's rare that you find a player that elevates teammates. And Arcia is regarded as one of those guys. So I think it would be, a shock to not see him in the major leagues at some point this season. They'll keep him down there at the start. He's yet to play at AAA, so he's got to take that step. Gene Segura is the Brewers' shortstop right now. He's got some years of club control left, but, with this rebuild going on, he's a prime trade candidate. If he can find a little offense early in the year, they could move him and open up that spot for Arcia. And the thought is that, as this rebuild continues, the hope, the strong hope, is that Arcia will be a real anchor of that process.
Adam, it's been made official since the last time you and I spoke. Chris Stewart is a Pirate now, a 2-year deal, I guess. And maybe that gives a little, foundation or finality to the catcher position this spring?
Yeah, well, I'd say the Pirates had two potential free agents heading into this season behind the plate, and Francisco Cervelli and Chris Stewart, both eligible for free agency at the end of the 2016 season. Now Chris Stewart is locked up for 2 years plus a club option for 2018. So you're looking at Stewart probably as the backup in Pittsburgh really for the next 3 years. That does provide some question as to Francisco Cervelli's future in Pittsburgh. At Pirate Fest a couple weeks ago, he said that he would love to end his career in Pittsburgh, which, of course, is a nice thing for any player to say about their current team. But obviously, Cervelli does a lot of things the Pirates like, and Cervelli loves catching their pitching staff and working with the coaches. But at this point, it's looking more and more like Cervelli will be a free agent and will be able to go elsewhere. He'll probably be, along with Matt Wieters, the best available catcher on the free agent market next year, so he could get himself a very nice deal, just like Russell Martin did a couple years ago. But fortunately for the Pirates, they do have quite a bit, actually, of catching depth in the minors. They have Elias Diaz, who is one of their top prospects, who should be the everyday guy at AAA this year. And then even further down in the system, most likely at AA this year, they have Reese McGuire, who is one of the top catching prospects in all of baseball. So Cervelli might walk at the end of the season, but they have Stewart there to back up and a couple of young guys to eventually replace Cervelli in the next couple of years.
So fans that head down to Florida for a little bit of spring training, they'll see a little bit of Diaz. Will they see a little bit of McGuire as well?
Yes, actually. He was one of the non-roster invitees, so he will get a chance to work with the pitching staff, the big league pitching staff, and some of the coaches there. Probably will learn a little bit from Cervelli and Stewart, who is a very good, sort of leader in the clubhouse and with the pitchers and the younger catchers. So it'll be interesting to see how he sort of meshes into the culture and works with some of the younger pitchers, because there's going to be a lot of those guys in camp as well.
You know, looking forward to Bradenton and spring training, later this week, MLBpipeline.com unveils its top 100 prospects. The lifeblood of any franchise, but particularly when we start talking small and mid-market franchises, has to be that development and consistent flow of players to the big leagues. It's difficult to operate like the Yankees and Dodgers. Mm-hmm. So for fans getting ready to go down to Bradenton and get excited about the future of this team beyond, let's say, 2016, who are some of the other big-name prospects that they should be looking out for?
Well, I think everybody's going to have their eyes on two pitchers in particular. That's Tyler Glasnow and Jameson Taillon. They won't break camp with the big league club. They'll start the season at AAA Indianapolis. But you're going to see them in Pittsburgh at some point in 2016, and then you're going to see them in the rotation for many years to come after that. Glasnow is one of the top prospects in all of baseball, just a really electric, tall right-hander, great fastball, working on his curveball to get it more consistent, but that's a strikeout pitch, and he's further developing his changeup to make sure that he has three solid average major league pitches, which when you combine that with his big frame and ability to repeat his delivery, he's going to be something to watch for a long time in Pittsburgh. And then Taillon's coming off of two, he won't call them lost years, he gets upset when you call them that, but 2 years where he hasn't thrown a pitch in an organized minor league game. So he's got some stuff to prove. I think it'll be really interesting to see how far he's come and how much he's changed since the last time we saw him, you know, pitch under anybody's eyes. You know, he's been on the chain link league, as he called it, down in Bradenton, sort of working in secrecy the last couple of years. So those are the two big guys you want to keep an eye on. Another one I would say is Alan Hansen, an infielder. Neil Huntington has said that if Jung Ho Kang isn't ready to go on opening day, Alan Hansen could make an argument for himself to be, you know, starting second baseman. So those are the sort of the on-the-brink guys that you want to keep an eye on in Bradenton this spring.
They've had they've been working out down there at Pirate City, right? Most mini and whatnot. And
yes,
you know, Josh Bell's a name that seems to come up quite a bit. What's his near and long term future look like?
He's still got some development to do at first base defensively. Last year was his first full season at the position. He's a converted outfielder, but I mean, you've seen a lot of encouraging things from him at the plate. He's become a little bit more consistent as a switch hitter, sort of balancing out from both sides of the plate. His power will come. That's something the Pirates have insisted on. They wanted him to develop first as a hitter, and then they'll add as a hitter with power. They didn't want him to view himself as a power hitter, if that makes any sense. They want him to be a hitter with power. So they think that's coming. He's gotten a little bit bigger. He's added what Neil Huntington calls man strength, so you should see a little more over-the-wall pop in 2016 at Indianapolis. But I think if there is a need, if something happens with John Jaso, who has had some injury issues in the past, you could see Josh Bell come up at some point later in the year.
Going back to some of the pitching you were talking about last now, Tyon, Tyon having missed the last 2 years, and as you called it, or I guess he called it the chain link league or whatever, what kind of concern do they have about moving him along, slowly at this point? Do you anticipate them maybe handling him with some kid gloves for a bit just to make sure that they don't push him too far too fast?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say kid gloves, but you're definitely right. They can't just rush him from throwing on backfields at Pirate City right into the major leagues, especially. They're going to want to see how he handles the competition, how he handles going every fifth day, sort of fitting back into that just being one of the guys kind of mentality. But I think at this point, he made it up to Indianapolis a couple years ago in a hurry. So if he shows that he can handle the level, and if the Pirates have a need at some point in the season, I think they won't hesitate to call him up. The one issue they will have is monitoring his innings, because when you haven't thrown, on any sort of consistent basis in the last 2 years, you got to wonder about how much he's capable of throwing and then how that would affect him in 2017 when they do want him to be a member of the rotation. So they're going to have to sort of walk that fine line between not overthrowing him early on in case they do need him later, but then you can't leave too many innings in the barn, because then, how is he ready for 2017 if he only throws 100 innings this year? So that'll be something to keep an eye on. I think you will see him ease in, shorter starts, things like that. But that's the case with Glasnow as well, because he's never thrown, 200 innings in a season or anything like that. And they're counting on both of those guys in 2017.
I was on the website, and I saw a little news about Bronson Arroyo maybe wanting to come back to Cincinnati, maybe a fit there for the Cincinnati Reds. I'm sure fans would love to see a guy like him back.
Yeah, he is someone that both is kind of a mutual interest, but the caveat, of course, is whether the price is right and whether he's healthy. On the second part, he says he's healthy. He actually was examined last week by the Reds medical department, and they looked at his elbow, which is, of course, he's been coming back from Tommy John surgery, missed all of 2015. And as far as the price is, he knows he's going to get an incentive-laden contract. It just has to be the right money. He has an offer on the table to possibly reunite with Dusty Baker, former Reds manager with the Nationals. They've offered him a minor league deal, and we're waiting for his reply on that. But I think he's giving every chance to the Reds to see if they can make a deal. Brian Price has already told him that they'd love to have his veteran knowledge in a clubhouse full of young people, especially young pitchers. And I think that would be a good fit for Arroyo. He's familiar with the city. He's familiar with the facilities. Of course, he's very popular with the fans. And I think he also likes the idea of coming back from the surgery in a lower stressed environment and the role of being a mentor. I think all that appeals to him. So if the Reds come with a decent enough offer, I can imagine him being back and in the fold at spring training.
I wonder, too, Mark, if he looks at it from the standpoint of where he could, make an impact at the big league level, get a chance to make some starts. In Washington, as you mentioned, a little higher expectations there this year. It might be a little more crowded in that rotation. At the same time, in Cincinnati, I would imagine that there would be some bias toward youth and building toward the future, even though he could be a stabilizing influence. I wonder how much that would affect his ability to get a lot of starts.
Well, I mean, I think he'll get some opportunities to start, because I don't think they would rush another kid along if they didn't have to. And I think that he could have a stabilizing influence on the rotation if he's as healthy as he says he is and he's able to go out every fifth day without any complications. He's going to take a lot of pressure off some of those kids and the bullpen if he can, go deep in games. If he's able to go 6, 7, 8 innings, that's really going to help the team. Even with the young guys, they didn't demonstrate last year, with the exception of DeSclafani, an ability to be pitch efficient and go well into games. And that would, I think, take some of the pressure off some of those guys. And having it, like you said, his influence in the clubhouse is also a plus. I don't think it would stunt anybody's growth, let's put it that way. And obviously, innings could always be found for some of these starters in the bullpen as well. They don't have to necessarily be in the rotation to get major league experience. So I think it could be a win-win for both sides if they're able to work it out. It just remains to be seen.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea of Arroyo back in a red uniform. That'll be an interesting one to follow. Meanwhile, as we discuss his situation, it does run hand-in-hand with that whole notion of the rebuild and the young players. So many rookies last year in the rotation. As we look ahead to spring training and who fans might get excited about seeing, let's say, at spring training, who are a couple of the younger, more high-ceiling prospects that we should be watching?
Well, all of the three top prospects, actually four top prospects, are going to be in Major League Camp, and Jose Peraza, Jesse Winker, Robert Stevenson, and Amir Garrett. And, you know, Peraza, who you and I talked about last week pretty well, is kind of blocked a little bit at second base where with Brandon Phillips around, and blocked at shortstop with Zach Cozart. And they're still evaluating whether he could play multiple positions or whether maybe starting in AAA might work for him. Jesse Winker is very familiar to a lot of Reds fans. He was the top prospect until Peraza was acquired in the trade. And left field is wide open right now, and there's a lot of more experienced guys as far as minor league and in age that may have a leg up on Winker. But I think, you know, if he pushes them and makes the decision harder, he could possibly skip a level and go right to the major leagues. If, of course, he has a great spring, you never know what can happen. So he came off, you know, in Double A last year. He had a kind of a subpar first half, but came on strong in the second half, looked really good. Made a lot of improvement. He's got a nice left-handed swing. He kind of compares a lot to Jay Bruce in both personality and maybe his approach. And that might bode well for him. And then, of course, Robert Stevenson, the number three prospect, is going to be one of those many myriad arms that are going to be vying for a rotation spot. And Stevenson was in AAA last year and seemed to do pretty well. And they like his chances, at least, to challenge for a spot.
You mentioned Amir Garrett as well, the former basketball player, right, at St. John's?
Yeah. He, a couple of years ago, finally decided to pack it in with the basketball and focus 100% on baseball, and it's really shown unbelievable results. He's been able to take his game to another level. He's had two very good seasons in the minor leagues at the Class A level. And so he's still a ways away. I don't see him challenging for a rotation spot in 2016, but 2017 definitely is not out of the question. So he's got some power stuff. He can throw 96. He's got some other abilities, you know, other pitches, and he's been shown a very high baseball intellect in a short amount of time. This was not his first sport. He pitched in high school and in college a little bit, but his primary thing was basketball, and now that he's dropped basketball and focused entirely on baseball, it's definitely proven to be a good decision.
Interesting. You know, a big power arm like that, do they, and maybe we don't even know yet how they're going to profile him, but, you know, I guess you get him as much innings as you can when they're in the minor leagues, and then does he profile as a back-end bullpen kind of guy, or is he a power starter for them?
Right now he's been a power starter. And I see that's what they see for him right now. He's been mostly a starter in the minor leagues, especially since he's focused entirely on baseball. So having that kind of arm and a left-hander at that in the rotation would be nice for them. They've been actually able to get a few left-handers in the organization because they got the three lefties they got from the Royals and the Cueto trade. So having a cachet, if you will, of left-handed power arms is not a bad thing. And, of course, if it doesn't work as a starter, you could always go to the bullpen, but they're definitely going to bring him along as a starter first.